Welcome to Shakespeare Alive, a podcast from the Shakespeare Birthplace Trust. My name is Anjana Chauhan. This podcast hosts conversations with people from all over the world who work or engage with Shakespeare across all sorts of media and genres. In this episode, I'm joined by stick figure artist and Shakespeare super fan, Mia Gosling. Now, Mia has an international profile and has risen to great heights with her, I suppose, irreverent, very accessible approach to Shakespeare. Her webcomic, Good Tickle Brain, is packed with cartoons ranging from play summaries to alternative endings and even popular culture mashups. All of them are based on her unique and really distinctive stick figure style. I'm actually a huge admirer of Mia's work, so I'm delighted to have the honour of introducing her to Shakespeare Alive. Welcome, Mia.
It's lovely.
Oh, my pleasure.
Well, it's our pleasure too to host you. Can you tell us a little bit about what your route to Shakespeare was? So what made you interested in Shakespeare?
My route to Shakespeare was definitely through the theatre. We live relatively close to the other Stratford in Ontario, Canada. And my parents every year would take me up there to see some shows. They took me to see A Midsummer Night's Dream. And I think that was my first exposure to Shakespeare. But my father then showed me films. Like, he showed me all the Laurence Olivier films, which he'd grown up with. And Henry V in particular really captured my imagination because I really enjoyed people running around with swords hitting each other. And that was exactly my cup of tea. But subsequently, every time we would go up to the Stratford Festival, I started insisting that instead of just seeing one or two Shakespeares, we see all the Shakespeares that they were producing every season. We've seen the entire canon except for Two Noble Kinsmen now.
Oh, that's good going. Well done.
It's not bad. It's not a bad run. So that's definitely how my relationship with Shakespeare started, was through performance.
And with those performances, Mia, what age were you when your father started taking you?
About 9 or 10. So I was fairly young, and I think, you know, a lot of the language probably went over my head, but you can still follow the plot and enjoy a Shakespeare play even at that age. And then when I started really getting into it, I was probably in our middle school, so around 12 is when I started really getting into Shakespeare. I did eventually encounter Shakespeare in school, but as I always say, fortunately, I already liked Shakespeare, because it's sometimes hit or miss when you first encounter Shakespeare in the classroom. And I have lots of friends who just were turned off completely by Shakespeare because they had to read it. I was fortunate that I had some good teachers, but then I also had an affinity for Shakespeare by the time I reached it in school.
What made your father so excited by Shakespeare?
I think he always, his parents were very sort of Anglophilic and theatrical. His father was from England. And so it was always just a part of the family culture. I don't think I'll have to ask him. I don't think they sat around and read Shakespeare every night, but they went to the theater and certainly they went to the movies very often. And my father saw the Laurence Olivier, Henry V in the theater. And that, I think, made a really big impact on him. So that was always just part of the family cultural legacy, I guess.
I love that you've kind of continued that family legacy, because you say yourself you love the history plays and Henry V. And the title of your website, Good Tickle Brain, is from Henry IV, Part One. So that's obviously one of your favourites.
Yeah, I really like all the history plays. I've always liked, even in you know, growing up, I would read fantasy novels, and it's all about who gets to sit on the throne and who has the power and battles and political intrigue. And so I've always gravitated towards the history plays. And when the Game of Thrones books and TV show came out, I was like, well, this is just the history plays. So yeah, the history plays have always been just so captivating to me, both the sort of political intrigue and also the family drama that goes on and how those two are meshed. They've always really appealed to me. So I always hesitate to pick favorites. So I don't think I would necessarily claim Henry IV Part One is my favorite, but it's certainly up there.
So you've got a childhood love for Shakespeare. Where does the cartoonist in you come from?
Well, certainly not from any sort of formal training. another family legacy, actually. It's when we would go on family trips, you know, there's always be a lot of waiting. This was before smartphones. It'd be a lot of waiting around at like the dinner table for dinner to come. And my parents always would have a sketchbook and we would sort of pass it around the table and everybody would just draw something that had happened during the day. So it was both a way to keep us entertained, but also as a way to document fun things that happened on vacation. And so I never really got the hang of drawing. So I would just draw these little stick figures and try and capture funny moments that had happened during the day. So I just kind of got in the habit of that. And then it seemed at some point a natural jump to sort of take that to Shakespeare. I mean, because a lot of our trips were up the Stratford Festival and revolved around seeing all these shows all the time. And so I started sort of documenting fun things about those productions in my stick figures, and it just kind of grew from there.
That's amazing. So stick figures was kind of like a familial story time sharing activity. So where did the idea come from to start doing Shakespeare in stick figure form and stick it on the internet?
I think the thing from my relationship with Shakespeare is that I just think it's fun. Like, I just think Shakespeare's plays are incredibly fun, and that's not necessarily the popular perception of Shakespeare's plays nowadays. And stick figures, besides being the only thing I can draw, they're just like a very non-threatening art form. They're just completely simple, basic, you know, no frills, no pretensions. And it just seemed like this was a fun way to communicate to people why I thought Shakespeare was fun, and like, you can too.
The idea that you're approaching Shakespeare with this sense of fun comes through in all of your work. For our listeners who aren't aware, Mia has condensed every single Shakespeare play into three key moments with some very humorous illustrations. Where did your idea for that come from?
I'll tell you the true story, which is, this was shortly after I started the website and I was posting three times a week, and I got kind of overwhelmed the amount of content I had to generate for this website. And I wanted something that I could do relatively quickly. And it suddenly occurred to me, it's like, well, a really easy thing to do would be to tell, you know, sum up each of the plays in just three panels each, which is really easy because three panels is easily beginning, middle, and end. It was just kind of a way to do a lot of comics very quickly. When I actually started sitting down and drawing those and writing them, it was really, really interesting the challenges that came with each individual play, which ones were easy to summarize, which ones were more difficult to summarize. I'm looking at you, Cymbeline. So it was a fun exercise. And I thought, you know, retrospectively, I'm really glad that I did that early on in my webcomic career, because it was a way to give everybody an easy entry to all the plays. So if I make a Cymbeline joke, they can go back and look at the Cymbeline comic and be like, oh, wow, okay, that's the play she's talking about.
I think the important thing to note about your work, Mia, is that it's irreverent, but it's irreverence that comes from a real knowledge and appreciation and understanding of the plays. Not just anybody could come along and summarize every single play in three key moments. I think your only exception to the three panels is Henry VI Part 3.
Yeah, I've got, there's actually two exceptions, but Henry VI Part 3, the clear plot is the way the crown switches back and forth all the time between Henry and Edward and Henry and Edward. So I ended up doing that one in, I think, five panels, just one panel for each switch. And then the other one was just Titus Andronicus, which I just had everybody dead in one giant panel, because That's your key takeaway from Titus Andronicus, is everybody dies in a variety of horrible manners.
Speaking of everybody dies, you've got the death clocks, and those are magnificent. And you kind of go in a sort of time order of who dies and when in all the sort of grisly plays. So Titus, Macbeth, Hamlet.
And those are great fun. And I think people are very drawn to those sort of infographic type comics that sum up in a really fun way the essentials of a play. So, you know, you're not going to get the entire plot of Hamlet by going through the death clock, but you can see, oh, this is where all the exciting stuff happens.
So you're very aware of the ludicrousness of everything that's going on in these plays.
I mean, I think that's important, is to be able to laugh at Shakespeare, not just, you know, laugh with it. Like, you have to actually laugh at his plays, because there's a lot in there that you just look at and have to shake your head and say, this is so over the top, this is so implausible, ridiculous, contrived. But that doesn't mean it's not also wonderful and enjoyable. You can also laugh at it. And I think that's the thing, is giving permission to people to laugh at Shakespeare and be able to say, oh, wow, that was a really stupid plot device. I think that's very freeing. And it lets people say, okay, this isn't this great cultural monolith that I have to bow down before somehow. This is something that I can engage with and I can mock and I can deconstruct in the way that I want to in a much more fluid and democratic way.
I think that's a really good way of describing what you do, Mia. You're giving people permission to mock, to laugh at Shakespeare. And you have a whole series of alternative endings or what should have happened in Hamlet or at the end of Much Ado About Nothing, for instance. So instead of having Hero accept Claudio, I can't quite remember what she does. Does she punch him in the face?
I think she just punches him in the face and then says, smash the patriarchy or something like that. Yeah, those ones are a lot of fun because you look at a lot of the ending of Shakespeare's plays, especially the problem plays or some of the comedies, and you just look at them and say, how is this funny? And so it's taking those sort of unresolved or unsatisfying endings, like Isabella or like Hero and Kate in Taming of the Shrew, and just be like, okay, if I had to write this ending today and make it satisfying for who I am as a person, what would I do? And, you know, it's not advocating that all heroes should punch Claudio in all future productions. It's just sort of exploring, like, oh, this would be really satisfying to see just once. And I'm probably not going to see it on stage, but I'm going to see it here in my comic.
You can make that dream come true yourself.
Exactly, yes.
So Mia was invited by the Folger Shakespeare Library in Washington, D.C. to deliver a live workshop back in 2016.
Yeah, so one of the things I did at the Folger was we did a live three-panel comic drawing in which people gave me a character and a play and a character to draw a three-panel comic of that. And I ended up with Twelfth Night and Sir Toby Belch, I think. And then I would just draw live on stage. I think the fun part of that is when people see you draw a comic live, they realize it's not that complex and it's something that they could also do. And I think it's the accessibility of that that's really fun to communicate to people, then to be able to show people, no, this is something that you could do. Like, you can also engage with Shakespeare in this way. You can explore your own relationship, not just Shakespeare, but anything. You know, you can draw comics about anything. It just sort of gives people another tool to use in communicating and exploring their own enjoyment.
So there is this real emphasis in what you're doing on just empowering people.
Yeah, it's about accessibility and just making it easier to access and engage with Shakespeare or anything. I hope my work has done that.
You use Shakespeare to engage with current affairs. So I remember a few years ago when Julian Fellowes, the producer and director, gave an interview where he was talking about Shakespeare in audiences, and I think it was ahead of the release of his film Romeo and Juliet, and he'd said that you can't possibly understand Shakespeare if you don't have an expensive education. I believe those were his words. And you'd actually come up with a comic in response to that and that spoke to what he was saying.
Yeah, I mean, those are exactly the kind of comments that I feel like I'm always working against, because what he's doing is just reinforcing the idea that Shakespeare is somehow for the elite. And it's not. Shakespeare is for the groundlings as much as the aristocrats who buy the box seats in the Globe. You know, you go to a Shakespeare play and you've never been before, maybe, and you don't understand the words. But if it's done right, you'll understand the meaning. You'll understand what's going on. You'll understand the emotion, the plot, and you'll be able to connect with it, even if you don't know what prithee means or why they're saying revenue. You know, you'll be able to hop over all those little stumbling blocks and get the essence of the play. And I think having an expensive education, just that notion of you need to be really smart and privileged to appreciate this is just, I'm trying to be polite because we're on a podcast here. But it's very, very frustrating and very counterproductive and also insulting to the intelligence of so many people.
On an international scale, not just in the US, but you have a great presence in the UK. I know you've come over to Stratford and we were very lucky to welcome you. We were all geeking out in the office.
Oh, I was that day. Geeking out immensely.
It was great. It happened to be a warm day. And that's why I remember it, because we have so few of those.
It was a charming, sunny, beautiful day. It was absolutely lovely. I had so much fun.
But circling back to your work, I know I just mentioned that you engage with current affairs. And obviously, most recently, we've been living through the COVID-19 global pandemic. And you've been really prolific throughout that. And one of my favourite things that you've done is to retell some of the plays as though the sort of plague or COVID happened to them. And that's great fun. So sort of like nobody would have died in Antony and Cleopatra if the war was suddenly off because everyone had to quarantine.
Yeah, it was fun because I just started that with the notion of, okay, if we had to self-isolate and social distance in each Shakespeare play, what would happen? And it became sort of very evident that in almost all of the tragedies, nothing bad would have happened. Like all the disasters that would have happened would have resolved themselves completely. Like Romeo and Juliet's a very obvious one. If they never, they couldn't go to a party because they wouldn't be properly social distanced. They would never have met, and nothing would. You know, all the tragedies would have. So it was really fun to sort of go through that one play by play and try and figure out how our current self-isolating situation would have impacted the plot of each of them.
So. It's great. It's great thinking about, and it's just so humorous. I know that you love musicals as well because you've done a 3-panel summary, Sondheim's A Little Night Music, which I love. So I was amazed that you'd done that.
I'm a massive musical geek and Sondheim geek. I think for Sondheim, I came to later than Shakespeare because I saw my first Sondheim production, Into the Woods, when I was probably 8 or 9. The thing that appeals to me about Sondheim is the same thing that appeals to me about Shakespeare, in some respects, is the language. And coming to Sondheim at a later age, I was really able to appreciate what he does with his words, the intricacy, the poetry. So yeah, huge Sondheim geek, but also all of musical theater, any kind of musical theater I'm a sucker for.
I'm sure I've heard you talk about operettas before.
Yeah, it's another one of the things I've inherited from my parents is one of our other theater trips would be going down to the Ohio Light Opera, which is a company in Worcester, Ohio, which produces, they do Gilbert and Sullivan and some fairly well-known Deflator Mouse, well-known operettas. That whole genre of operettas and just sort of the melodrama. And again, there's an element of ludicrousness about them. And what I like about the Ohio Light Opera is they often don't shy away from that, and they really play up how silly some of the plots are and how silly some of the over-the-top reactions to everything are. And again, it's that permission to laugh at something.
I mean, the whole topsy-turvy notion is very Shakespearean at its core. And we know Gilbert loves Shakespeare as well. So I bet you've been asked this before. Can you do the Pirates of Penzance modern major general?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I probably could. I'm not going to on the air, for sure. But actually, Pirates is actually a big part of how I got into theater in the first place is I think when I was 3 years old, my parents took me to the Stratford Festival for the first time, and we saw the Pirates of Penzance there. And then I became a maniac for pirates. But then my parents would sort of scour local theater listings to find out who was doing the Pirates of Penzance at any given time. And then we would drive all over our area of the Midwest to go to various productions of pirates. So that was a formative part of my growing up.
We're going to take a quick break now.
The Shakespeare Birthplace Trust is the charity that promotes the life, work and times of William Shakespeare in his hometown of Stratford-upon-Avon. We look after 5 houses associated with Shakespeare and his family. We make freely available an internationally important library, archive and museum collection. We lead new research and we run an award-winning education programme. In light of this podcast, please consider making us a donation. You can do this by visiting shakespeare.org.uk and following the Make a Donation link at the bottom of the homepage. Your support and goodwill really matter to us, and we hope you'll recommend our podcast to your friends.
You're listening to Shakespeare Alive with me, Andna, and I'm talking to Mia Gosling.
So if our listeners want to find out more about your stuff, where should we send them, Mia?
Best place to go is my website, which is goodticklebrain.com. You can also find me on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at goodticklebrain.
Your medium through connecting with audiences is very much digital. So it's website, it's through social media. Do you think that's the future of Shakespeare engagement?
I don't think it's necessarily the future in that it will push other mediums out of existence. I think it's the future in the way that it's just becoming a more and more prevalent way of communicating with people in general. But I think properly done social media is just a great way to reach a vast number of people who would not have necessarily known you even existed. For a lot of creators, and I think this extends also to theaters and museums and educational organizations, I think with Shakespeare is there is a lack of access to it, both in schools and in the theater. And any sort of work that can be done to make it more accessible to people, it is great.
Quite literally, your work does make Shakespeare accessible. One of my favourite things that you've done is your giant poster on what Shakespeare play to go and see. And it's this incredibly elaborate flowchart about your preferences that lead you to a play that might be best suited to you. I mean, you must have been working on that flowchart for a long time.
It definitely took me a while. I wanted to put that together for, I believe it was the 400th death anniversary back in 2016. But it was a lot of fun to think organically about, okay, where would you start if you wanted to go and see a Shakespeare play? Like, do you feel like you want to laugh? Do you feel like you want to cry? And then sort of categorize the plays from there and then continue to sort them out. So that was a lot of fun to put together, although I've had some people say that I'm bad mouthing Henry VIII a bit too much by having that one be the one that you should see if you want to take a nap.
Yes. It's a great, I mean, it's not a great piece of theater, but it's a lovely piece of writing.
It drags a lot. Like, there's not a lot of action. And if you take out Catherine of Aragon, like, there's nothing to keep you there. But like,
there's Cardinal Wolsey, and he's amazing.
Okay.
And the execution of the Duke of Buckingham.
It's really about Catherine of Aragon. I'm sorry. I've actually seen two live productions now of Henry VIII. And after I did the flowchart, I saw the production last year, I believe, which was actually spectacular. And I genuinely loved it. And so now I'm feeling a little bit bad for slandering it on my poster.
Do you have any sense of what your ambitions are for Good Tickle Brain in the future, Mia?
One aspect of Good Tickle Brain that I definitely want to work on developing more is sort of coming up with more of a toolkit for teachers to use my work in the classroom, because I get lots of messages from teachers asking, oh, you know, can I use your comics with my students? And I'm always delighted to say yes. Sort of, I've started work on coming up with a sort of packet that teachers could possibly use to get their students to draw comics as a way of engaging with Shakespeare on their own terms. And the idea is that there's no right or wrong way to draw Shakespeare comics. It's just purely reflects how you're engaging with Shakespeare. So it's definitely one of the projects I would like to work on more.
That's fantastic. And it's lovely that students use your work. As you know, at the Shakespeare Birthplace Trust, we pull out your work all the time. I think it's everywhere. And it's great as introductory material. I suppose in many ways, it's even better for people who know the plays really well, because you get that the sense of the irreverence and the subversion that's going on in it.
That's always a tightrope I walk with my comics, is because when I draw a Shakespeare comic, inevitably, there end up being a lot of in-jokes or references in it. But I also want it to be accessible to people who might not get those. So it's trying to find that balance is always a challenge, but a lot of fun.
Well, it's one that you do meet very, very well, Mia. And I certainly really enjoy it when you walk that tightrope. You have been invited to the Folger, to Stratford-upon-Avon. I think you did some stuff with the Fundación Shakespeare in Argentina as well. Mm-hmm. So do you have a sense of where else you want to go and conquer in the world now, Mia?
I don't like the idea of conquering, but it's a very, very sort of colonial Shakespeare to the four corners of the globe. My family, my mother's family is from Singapore. And so I spent a lot of time visiting them and then traveling around Southeast Asia and studying several Southeast Asian languages and spending a lot of time out there. But I'm not actually very familiar with the Shakespeare world out there. It would be very interesting for me to look into that more and get a chance to go out there and maybe see what's happening in Shakespeare in that part of the world.
That would be so cool, Mia. Now, I know that you've come to visit us in Stratford. We're asking all of our guests on this series to choose something from our collections that perhaps speaks most vividly to them. What would you pick?
I mean, sort of two things come to mind. One is the window in the birthplace itself, which has all the scrawlings of people who came by and visited and put their name in there. And I think that just speaks to this sort of desire for people to have a connection with Shakespeare somehow. And I think it's just, you know, you want to come and leave your mark at his birthplace and just sort of reinforce that physical connection. There's something very sort of compelling about that window. The other thing is just in the exhibition at the Birthplace, they had some of the various translations of Shakespeare that you had in different languages on display. And Shakespeare in translation is something that fascinates me, which I haven't looked into nearly as much as I would like to. But the idea that you can take Shakespeare and translate him into another language, and the whole question of is it still Shakespeare and stuff like that, I think it is. As someone who basically translates Shakespeare into vernacular English in my comics, the transformation of Shakespeare from language to language and medium to medium is one that's always fascinating to me. So I would love to explore more of Shakespeare in translation, and I know you have a lot of translations there at the Birthplace.
Yeah, we have so many. And actually, a couple of years ago, we found that we have a Gujarati edition of All's Well That Ends Well. In fact, we have several editions, and that's my family's mother tongue. So it was really exciting. So I got to take some of the scans to my grandfather, and we sat together translating them. So it's always really exciting.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I know, when these things kind of are so much more personal. And I think our listeners already know, we also have a Klingon translation of Hamlet as well.
I have the Klingon translation of Hamlet myself. So
Of course you do. Are you a Trekkie? Exactly. That was beautiful. Do that again.
My accent might be off. It's been a while since I brushed up my Klingon.
Maybe the Trekkies amongst our audience can write to us and let us know what they thought of your delivery. So can we look forward to a Shakespeare Trekkie combo in your work?
There is one, actually. I'd say a few months ago I did a Starship crew made up of Shakespeare characters. So they had a captain and a first mate and the doctor and the engineer and everyone, and I cast them all from Shakespeare. So
it's so wonderful making these connections to popular culture.
Part of the reason for that is just it reinforces the fact that Shakespeare is popular culture, and we kind of lose sight of the fact, but he was popular culture for his day, and I don't see why he can't be part of popular culture today.
Sure, he's not off limits. More Star Trek Shakespeare. Thank you very much.
I'll work on it immediately.
That's a personal request. Thank you. With our collection back in Stratford-upon-Avon, we're obviously tasked with collecting items, objects, books, documents that tell the story of Shakespeare in the 21st century and beyond. Is there anything that you would potentially or hypothetically bequeath to us to continue that narrative?
Apart from my complete works at some point.
I mean, absolutely. We'll put that in straight away.
I don't know. I think one of the really important things to collect are things that people have created in response to Shakespeare. Because I think one of the very interesting things about Shakespeare is how generative his work is. And not just in that you can do the same Shakespeare play in an infinite number of ways and reflect the time and the place and the culture, but also in the way that it generates response. What are people's responses to Shakespeare? And, you know, there's a lot of negative baggage attached to Shakespeare. How are we dealing with that? It's because Shakespeare is traditionally very old and very white and very male. And I think breaking out of that box and really gathering different voices just give us a much more complete picture of Shakespeare, its relevance, and I think its irrelevance too. It's important to document all aspects of it. And so seeking out that kind of material, I think, would be really important.
I like your point about irrelevance, because it's something that we're not very healthy about acknowledging.
Yeah, exactly. And I always tell people, you're completely free not to like Shakespeare. There are many things that I don't like in the world, and it doesn't mean that I'm saying that they're bad or worthless. It's just not not to my taste. And I think people are completely free to not like Shakespeare and not be considered, you know, Philistines or uncultured. And sort of keeping that tone in my comics is certainly something that's important to me, not to feel like this is something that you should like and you should appreciate, but this is something that I like. Let me show you why, and you can make your own opinions from there.
If you could live, because I know you visited, or I don't know if you've actually visited all of our properties.
I missed Mary Arden's and Anne Hathaway's set.
So of the ones that you did visit, if you had to pick one to make yours, so let's say you could move yourself in and potentially your parents, which one would it be and why?
I mean, I'd probably go for Hall's Croft, but I like sort of the spaciousness of Hall's Croft and and the gardens and trees outside. So that would probably be my pick.
It's a really good choice. It's certainly, I think, the most homely of the townhouses.
Yeah, it's the most livable place, I think. I mean, I don't know, new place might have been wonderful, but it's a little bit flat right now.
It has no walls.
Yes.
Just by way of conclusion, I know that you've done a lot of work on Shakespearean insult, but you've got a t-shirt full of Shakespearean insult.
Yes. Yes, I do.
Do you have a favorite insult?
So my favorite insult is probably you Banbury cheese. I think what I like about it is it takes something that's presumably fairly innocuous and just turns it into an insult. Like, you can make anything an insult if you want to. And I think that one is just the perfect illustration of how Shakespeare can make anything an insult.
He certainly can. Should we make our adieus to one another in the form of insults, Mia?
Yes. I'm trying to think of a good one.
Adieu. May we be better strangers.
Let's meet as little as possible.
Indeed. Well, on that note, Mia, it's wonderful to be able to chat with you. And listeners, please do check out Mia's work. It is absolutely marvellous. We wish you all the very best for your future endeavours with Good Tickle Brain and indeed all your other projects. Mia Gosling, thank you very much and adieu.
Mia suggests lots of new and exciting voices. So what would you like to deposit into the collections of the Shakespeare Birthplace Trust? Something real or imaginary? We'd love to hear from you via shakespeare.org.uk/future. And while you're there, please consider completing our short survey so we can produce more of the content that you like.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Shakespeare Alive with Anjana. Next week, I'll be talking to Deborah Ann Bird, the entrepreneurial artistic director of the Harlem Shakespeare Festival, about why she founded her company, what it does, and about her important and inspiring memoir, Becoming Othello, A Black Girl's Journey, a project which began with the Shakespeare Birthplace Trust in Stratford-upon-Avon.